everyone. You spoke and we listened. We have a real-life lawyer. So unlike one of the past episodes where we use ChatGPT to validate all our scientific findings, we have a real-life person who actually knows what they're doing. So today we're diving into the essentials of contracts for freelancers. We'll start with some of the basics, why you should always have a contract, what risks you face without one, and then we'll break down the must-have clauses that you've requested, privacy, payment terms, and how to protect yourself if things go south financially. And then we're also going to touch on the very tricky terrain of NDAs, non-competes, and restraints of trade clauses, how those could affect future work and negotiating those, etc. So without further ado, Nicolene, welcome. Thank you so much for being here today. We're very excited to have you on. You are not the first guest we've ever had, but you're the first person who's actually got a legal qualification. So welcome. We're very excited to have you.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. So the people listening, we do have listeners in other countries, but the general audience is based here in South Africa. So we find that a lot of contracting stuff that does get discussed is a lot from the international perspective. You know, you can find stuff a lot on American contracts and UK contracts, but not so much on South African. So do you want to maybe dive in and just give us a little bit of information around the contract basics, why you should have one? What happens if you don't? Shay, for example, is really strict on her contracting. I've found that clients don't really ever sign any agreements with me because I'm a one-man band or one-woman band. And so technically, I'm not protected. So let's dive into the basics. Contracts, should you have one? Is it critical for freelancers? And what happens if you don't have one?
Well, I think in today's environment, it's a very dangerous prospect for us not to document what we've promised one another. So I want to start off by demystifying the technical terms of contracting to say, quite essentially, we make a record of that which we've promised. And the person who we've promised said service to, whatever it may be, reciprocates with a promise to pay for that or to compensate us for that. There's a promise of equal exchange in a document form. So that's the first principle. Of course, when things are well between us, then we often feel, but you know, there's no issue here. So we can get away with not putting it to paper. I want to say that a contract is really valuable when something doesn't go as we hoped it would, when something unforeseen occurs, there's a hurdle in the road, and we have to navigate that bump. Why? Because we may have a lot on our plate when that happens. It may even cause an emotional reaction when that happens. And then we have a roadmap through it, out of it. And that's what a written document gives us. And that's why it's so valuable to invest in having a decent one, because it becomes your roadmap when things get really tough and tricky. And in that sense, it can actually save you from a lot of unnecessary time spent and cost spent, ending up in a dispute situation with a client that you've performed under the contract for, and now you're fighting and working double to get what you've already earned. And sometimes it's not just double, it's triple, it's four times that, it's 10 times that. And that's what we're seeking to avoid at its very core.
Now, what kind of, now we're speaking to a bunch of freelancers. We run our own businesses. We are small entities. We don't necessarily have the financial resources to take a client who is in breach of contract down the legal route. What help is a contract if, like, we don't have the finances to actually back that contract up? You know, a client doesn't pay us. Now we want to sue for that payment, but it's going to cost us more in the long run to actually follow a legal route. So maybe you could just clarify that specific point.
That's a very good point, and I'm so glad you raised it. Often the criticism we get against contracts, let's take a sample, for example, a NDA or a non-disclosure agreement. I'm often told, but what is the point of having one if I have to go to court to enforce it anyway? Then it didn't help me. And there is some truth in that statement. But the point is, if we haven't canvassed what we are going to do and how terms under which we are willing to share our information or our ideas, then we don't have a claim at all. So the argument to be made that I have to go to court to enforce this and I don't have the money, so what's this piece of paper worth to me, versus not having it at all and being in the same position, I know that in that linear sense, there's an argument to be made. But if we don't have it, we are trickling a chain reaction where it's not just about this one incident, it's about the ripple effect of any other breaches that may occur. So related to payment, if we don't have a document, a contract of some sorts regulating our terms, what you will give and what the recipient will get in a financial transactional sense, and a method out of it if it doesn't work for us. If we don't have that in place and we sit back and we don't enforce our rights, it's a small environment for many of us, particularly with the use of technology. It's just a question of time before people start talking and saying, oh, I didn't pay her. She didn't do anything. Mm. And even though that's maybe seems to be a distant risk, the reputation, the it's okay not to pay her. At the end of the day, that is something that we don't want to run rampant in our environment, particularly as small business owners. So what can we do? I'm not saying we have to build our ways out of these types of scenarios, pave it all the way to the courthouse. No. Mm. What I'm saying is we need to be creative around when your milestones trigger your payments and to keep them nice and tight so that you don't effectively run credit for your customers who are large businesses or maybe and can afford to do that, whilst you, conversely, cannot afford to do that. So don't extend major credit to them. Take a bit of a deposit and be more creative on how you can limit the eventuality or the margin of potential error. You need to be on top of this and manage it with a really drawn-in belt. We cannot run the brick road all the way to the courthouse. That's not sustainable. Mm. But I also want to say that there are organizations that allow for dispute resolution in a robust and a affordable way. Many of these organizations outside of the court structures are really good at looking into and referring your dispute by agreement to mediation, for example, or arbitration through an organization that is specifically geared at the needs of the small business and solo entrepreneur. And that way, that cost is eliminated. So it's all about being smart with how we put it together.
Yeah. Perfect. So we've that's obviously the why and et cetera. Essential things to have in a contract. One obviously payment terms, anything financial, scope of work, etc. One of the things that the audience was quite interested in is any kind of legalese around privacy and the POPI Act specifically for South Africa. And, you know, GDPR in Europe. I know there's other laws around the world that govern privacy. So could you just dive into what privacy actually means and how to specify that in a contract?
So all of us have to comply on an international standard when it comes to data privacy. And I think the easiest way for us to maybe just give a simplistic explanation of what this means, because it seems very overwhelming and quite frankly, it seems intimidating to many of us. It means the information you take custody of, whether that's the information of your customer, maybe colleagues that work with you, maybe suppliers, any information that doesn't specifically belong to you and I as the warm body sitting here, and any information belonging to our businesses of which we are in turn the decision maker of, if it's an entity. So in South Africa, POPI applies to the individual people as well as to the organization, whilst GDPR only applies to the warm body or the human in the mix. So it's anything that is specific to you, your name, your blood type, your likeness, your preferences, your opinions, anything that is uniquely what makes me Nicolene and is only that to me and can be associated to me. So we call that a unique identifier. My cell phone number, which is not publicly available, that sort of thing. So it may be anything that is not on someone's website or social, but that you use because you have to invoice them, or you use it because you have to make contact with a stakeholder on their end for purposes of the project you're involved in. So that's what we're talking about. And what it means is your client or the person you're collecting from needs to know that you're doing that. They need to know why you are doing that. And you need to make sure that you're not being negligent with the information. So this is really a lifestyle of us recognizing that the information that we are in control of in this context is being trusted to us. And that we need to, it's almost the same concept of someone saying, will you hold on to this 50 Rand note for me? I'll fetch it from you tomorrow. Then we'll take extra good care of that, right? Because it's not ours. Yet we don't think about digital information or data that we collect in order to do our daily functions where it doesn't belong to us. So in a nutshell, it's a lifestyle change that we need to make. It's not just a box we need to tick. Of course, we need to register with the information regulator in South Africa. Anyone needing more information on that is welcome to get in touch with me. I'm more than willing to give you a nudge in the right direction on how to get that done.
Perfect. So when as freelancers, you know, some people have lawyers, some people don't. When I started my business, and I don't know if Shay wants to chime in here as well, when she started hers, I went to a lawyer. I paid a ton of money to have a legal document drawn up. It was all in legalese, etc. Then I needed to add POPI on top of that, which I then just took like a standard thing off the internet. I found some legal website that had a standard POPI thing. I chucked that in as well. Could you maybe give us the structure of adding that privacy section to contracts?
Firstly, and I don't want to harp on this too long, I want to challenge all the listeners today that you need to look for firms that are moving with the times and that have the ability to recognize that whether your business is really big, or whether you're just starting out, or whether you are completely fine in a small setup, it doesn't mean your needs are relatable to the number of headcount or bank balance within your business. So look for someone who gets the concept, right? And we do exist. Secondly, we don't have to pay a ton of money for drafting. There are a number of platforms, some of which you know, belong to us. So people can go and check that out. There's a full suite of documents which you can gain access to for much less than what I think you paid, if I read between the lines. And they're all up to standard. So you can either use it on our platform transactionally, or you can subscribe and you pay as little as 99 Rand a month to get access to that level of resource. So I think it's a question of recognizing that there are still legal providers out there that they haven't quite adapted to a technologically driven world, or haven't adapted to distinguishing legal needs from the bank balance and that sort of thing. So I challenge you to really go look for someone who gets where you want to go with your business and can help you get there. For us, and I think from a design, a legal design point of view, we feel that your documents have to be in alignment with your marketing message. So your why has to pull through to every legal document in your business, so that any employee, any colleague, any supplier or customer can see, oh, I've been sold this, and the document that I'm going to sign says the same thing. We're in alignment. We've built trust. And that will inadvertently also then reduce your likelihood of getting embroiled in an expensive drawn out dispute. And there's data to prove the statement. So
yeah,
I'm not a fan of just plucking a clause in there, right? Because it needs to read nicely and it needs to sound like you and feel like you and look like your business branding does. So I would rather say it has to be in there. But I don't think just sticking it in as an add-on makes much sense. So I would rather say it needs to be in there. We need to be clear on what we're collecting, why we're doing it. It needs to say that. And we need to showcase that when we disclose, under which circumstances we'll do that or not do that. And weave it into every document from that point. So that would be my counter.
Okay, perfect. Shay, do you have any questions on privacy or anything? You've been very quiet.
So I do have a list of questions. I don't know when quite I should bring them in.
Sorry, I was going to say this. We're in the section now where we're talking about our own contracts as freelancers. The next question is about signing contracts with other people. So, yeah, go ahead, dive in.
Okay. So I suppose this is quite a general question, and maybe, Meeks, we can edit this to go elsewhere. But if a freelancer out there has never sent a client a contract in their life, where would you suggest they begin?
Well, I think we need to see what their process of transacting with their customer look like, right? So many freelancers have web forms on which they collect the relevant data in order to quote. So we always move from the point of looking at how do you find your clients? And once you have the lead and you've had the conversation and you do the cost estimation, how do we take it from a lead to a sale? And, you know, where can we slot in the agreement there? So for many of my clients, I like to look at how you are currently doing things and how we make a slight tweak in your process, so that it doesn't burden you with administration to actually practically do this. So if we are doing a quotation, it could be sensible to simply have terms and conditions as part of your quotation. This is how I work. This is how long it will take, et cetera, et cetera. So then it could be much more sensible to actually just slot it in there, because then your document that you're already using may only become slightly longer, but your process is then full circle.
I like that. So yeah, I think we can move on. Do you have some more questions, but we can always chuck them in at the end.
Cool. Moving on, obviously now we've covered stuff that we as freelancers should have in our specific contracts, but the way the freelancing world has changed is you get a lot of marketing companies that will outsource work to you as a freelancer. And that's a whole different ballgame when it comes to contracts, because that contract is generated on the client side. And while most of them are pretty standard, some that I've seen, I've actually turned work down because they've had all kinds of restraints of trades and non-competes, which obviously affect my ability to secure additional work as a freelancer. So what should people look out for when they're doing business with these kind of hubs that farm work out? What should they be very careful of in terms of specifically NDAs, restraints of trade, non-competes, to make sure that it doesn't restrict them to not be able to grow their business or not be able to access certain markets or clients, etc.?
This is a huge problem, and I'm so glad that we are discussing this frankly today. I think there's an overall issue with specifically larger organizations farming out to various, let's call them the middlemen or the middle people, to be more inclusive. The problem is that we want the benefit of freelancing as consumers of the service or the offering that you offer, but we don't want the obligations that go along with it if we want to restrict you, right? So if we want to restrict you, we are marrying two concepts that should never, in my mind, be married at all. You are either someone's employee with full access, with restrictions on when, where, and how you move, and when you work and when you don't work, in a very hierarchical situation, right? And of course, one needs to appreciate if that commitment is made from our perspective, then we would want to see that if a restraint is called upon, that the rest is balanced out in terms of the commitment made, that it's a longer term, it's exclusive, and all of that. But when we see restrictions of that nature, which do not belong in a freelancing sense, where you're open to work with a range of different clients, my robust advice to my clients normally is, do not sign that restraint of trade, because we need to look at the protectable interest. So beyond the point that they may not even be legally binding in the first place or unenforceable because they are so onerous and they aim to protect so many different things because they've been copied and pasted from somewhere else, or we've confused the employment relationship with the freelancing relationship, or we're creating some ill-conceived hybrid of the two, whatever the case may be. The point is, as a freelancer, the benefit is the flexibility that you have, the choice that you have, the non-exclusivity which employees don't have, in simple terms. So that restraint, and I know that if we're working on a highly sensitive project with sensitive data that we have access to, there may be some level of restraint where the client would say, I don't want you to speak about what we've done here. And if you do, this will be the repercussion, right? That there's a confidentiality provision. It cannot restrict your ability to work for someone else, right? So we need to be very careful, and I think we need to consider those clauses very carefully. When it comes to non-competes and so on, of course, you go in as the freelancer, and certainly from a credibility perspective, we also wouldn't want anyone to exit alongside you when you are finished with the project. So employees resigning in masses, other suppliers not wanting to work with this client anymore. You know, those things are ethical issues, which I think is only fair to include and to say, you know what, I come in to do my part. This is the project. This is how I work. This is what I do. I'm not going to poach your employees. I'm not going to leave with your supplier database. I'm not going to steal your trade secrets and sell it to someone else. Those are fair requests for us to commit to. But restricting your ability to work and move, I'll be very careful and consider that with some professional assistance.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you. Shay, we do have some time. So do you want to release the sluice gates of your additional questions?
The flow, I'll try and manage the flow. It's not too bad. But So the one question is, working with international clients versus South African clients, is there anything, for want of a better legal term, special to include in contracts for international companies?
I think the payment terms become a real issue cross-border. We don't have money to litigate locally if someone doesn't pay us. Now, multiply that by 100 if it's outside of the country, maybe even in a different time zone where you are being paid in a foreign currency. Those guys usually have big gun lawyers. We can't compete with that. So my robust advice is to take prepayment. Take prepayment, try and maybe look at if you can sell hours, packages. I know it's not possible in all industries, but saying the quote for this particular project, it's going to take me 30 hours to conduct the work that you require. And if you could pay me as a deposit, half of that, and then before I give you this, the other half. So that you always have the proverbial carrot, that you have something they need in order to unlock your payment. And of course, there's a fine balance to strike on that point, because you also don't want to seem distrustful, and you don't want to create a perception that could actually damage the relationship. So how to craft that is very situation specific, but trying to limit the margin of credit, again, much more important than try to take prepayments if possible. Most of these offshore virtual assistants that I know many local South Africans make use of, which are also freelancers in a way, they also take prepayment in advance. You prepay for the time you acquire, the service time you acquire. So let's take those principles from maybe other industries and take the best practice and say how we run a cash only business, and limit the eventuality of problems in that.
Thank you. And then I also wanted to ask, I mean, often I've heard the kinds of things you find in contracts, some might actually not even be enforceable. Are there some common unenforceable things that you see either in contracts from clients or contracts from entrepreneurs, freelancers, whatever, that we actually shouldn't be including at all?
I think we've unraveled the whole restraint of trade debate quite a bit. I think for me, in a freelancer context, that's the biggest one, which in fact, I actually recommend that we don't agree to at all, ever, right? And of course, sometimes the contract, you know, we need to reach some form of beneficial or acceptable compromise. But for the most part, I feel if we are not employees, and we don't have that level of commitment from our clients, then of course we need to balance the scales here on that point conceptually. So we've discussed that. I think the other thing that I often see is that the contracts are very vague, right? We as an outsider reading it, they can't tell you, so what exactly have we agreed to do here? And what I find curious, and I always say this, if you are really stretched for, and maybe you just want to gain your own thinking before you take advice, it's really good to take an unrelated person and to ask them to read the contract and to tell you what they think it means, right? So what do you think I'm going to do, and what do you think this other person's going to do? Because you often miss that very fundamental first point of, is it clear what I'm saying I'll do, what you will pay me for, when you'll pay me, and what your obligations or expectations are. And that's actually the key ingredient. Is it clear enough to say this is what is being sold and this is what is being paid, right? So I think that's the one that I see quite a lot of. And then, of course, indemnities. We haven't spoken about that, but basically a blank check that you can't claim against your customer for anything if anything goes wrong, if they do something, etc. I think if you see anything remotely related to the word indemnity, it doesn't quite fit in this kind of environment unless there's a level of risk that we need to control on either side. And then, of course, it should probably be a clause that would go both ways. But again, it depends on your context. But I would say keywords being restraints of trade, indemnity, those are the two big ones to look at, and that could potentially be unenforceable or could be enforceable to your detriment. And then, of course, looking at clarity. Just say it. Just say what you are going to give, under which terms and conditions, and what the client can expect in return, exactly as you would craft your marketing message for your website or social media. But of course, with all the legal components in it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I just have one comment and then one more question. So building on what you said about clarity, I think sometimes the way that I like to view a contract is not necessarily a legal tool, because as you say, going to the court is a last resort and is not accessible to most of us, but it's a communication tool. So just making sure that you have all the awkward stuff out the way from the beginning and you're literally on the same page. And then one last question is, can you tell us a little bit more about you and your services?
Thank you. I want to add on to your comment before I do that. Unfortunately, the perceptions around the legal side of your business is that it's some static thing that you get done, you pay a lot of money for, and then it gets filed somewhere to be taken out when there's a disaster. And then, of course, we pave the brick road all the way to the front doorsteps of the courthouse. I don't think thinking like that benefits any of us. I want to challenge you to say that every interaction in your business, customers, referrals, whatever the case may be, is a relationship, right? Our ability to choose relationships well, to forge them using solid documents, which manages all the awkward stuff and deals with things that can potentially go wrong, how we will deal with scenario A, B, C. It's a roadmap. And our ability to know whether a relationship is a good one or a bad one, because we've put some level of measurement into that conceptually in our document, makes this a living, breathing thing. And that's its purpose. And if you are being sold something that doesn't look like that, feel like that, then we are busy with that static document that sits somewhere in a filing cabinet. And ultimately, I don't think those documents work, right? So I want to echo, I think it's valuable. It's a legal document, yes, but it's a living document that aims to help you drive your best relationships, to choose them, to really look at them critically, and to use them to your benefit and to that of the person who you are serving. So yeah, who am I? I'm Nicolien Schoeman-Low. I'm the managing director of Schoeman-Low Incorporated. We're based in Cape Town. We proudly serve the legal needs of entrepreneurs. We've been doing that since 2007. We are passionate about servicing all the legal components of your business. We also have a training arm called Pocket Advisor, where businesses being curious about getting their legal ducks in a row can access our Legal for Startups and Legal for SMEs programs. It's short, it's visual, I would like to think it's fun, and it navigates you through all the legalities in the business in a short space of time. It's about 25 minutes of your time per module, and there are five. At the end of each module, you get asked some questions to make sure that the concepts make sense, and then you can download the relevant agreements from Contracts for Biz, which is our online contract building tool, so that you can learn and you can implement. So it's not a lecture style, someone yap yaps in front, and we've got something that makes sense in the moment, but when we leave, so what does this mean for me? So those programs are ideally structured to help anyone in business who is very busy or who doesn't, and I don't think we should be spending hundreds of thousands of rands to get these ducks in a row. Once you've done that, then you can engage with a law firm that can help you, and a right fit law firm that can help you make that design alignment between your messaging and all the documents. So then we build on a solid foundation and we color the picture in your colors in by way of comparison. It's a very creative process and a very unique process. And that, if you've got those two things in place, statistically, we've measured over 15 years, we're able to keep you out of those doorsteps of court by at least a margin of 50%, if not more. So that's the benefit of making that investment. So yeah, if anyone wants to engage, please connect with me on LinkedIn. I would love to have a conversation.
Perfect. Thanks so much. We'll put your links and your LinkedIn profile in the show notes as well, both for the YouTube channel as well as the podcast. Thanks again. Thanks again, Nicolene. This has been really informative. I am obviously doing contracting all wrong. I'm not doing it at all. So, thank you. I don't think that I'm unique. I think that it's a problem across the freelancing community. That which you don't understand, you tend to avoid. So thank you for clarifying a lot of stuff for us.
It's also very intimidating, you know, and I realize that. And you know what? We can do our little bit for the broader community. So if you want more sessions, more topics, I'm always happy to help. I feel that if people know better, they can do better. And we don't need to commoditize that. Good information should be freely available.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much. To the viewers, to the listeners, we hope this has been helpful. It's definitely been helpful for me personally. While you're here, don't forget to subscribe, leave a comment on the YouTube channel, and check out the show notes for any relevant links that might have been mentioned in this interview. And on that note, thank you so much for joining, and we'll see you in the next episode.